So what if the answer to getting the economy back on track were to create your own, to create an economy where it would exist to serve the people rather than the people existing to serve the economy? Well, that's the big idea behind the new film, Fixing the Future, hosted and co-produced by David Brancaccio, who you probably know, soon to be new host of the Marketplace Tech Report. Many of you know him from his days on the show Now on PBS. Hi, David. Welcome back.
Hello there, Brian.
You're on a mission with this film to find out what Americans are doing to turn the economy around in their own communities. And we'll play some clips from the documentary in a minute. But you really were looking for people who were doing things out of the box.
Exactly. Innovation. Now, maybe this is the one non-controversial statement someone's going to make on WNYC today. The economy could do better. You get Republicans, you get Democrats, you get centrists who are thinking deeply about this. And so I was curious, all right, so...
Okay, we can all go back to listening to Light FM now. We have established that the economy can do better.
Exactly. So if we agree on that, then who's doing something about it in this beautiful, diverse country of ours? I come from a mill town in Maine that's pretty sad. The big employers have left. There's two huge factories you take a look at, and they're empty mainly. So I was like, all right, how do we do better? How do we bring jobs? How do we bring prosperity to people? So instead of going on the number four train to Wall Street, because they got their own problems right now, I went somewhere else. Even Washington right now, you know, with all the gridlock, it didn't seem the place to start. So I went to Main Street looking for innovations. Like, who's rethinking this in a way that I could learn from and that might be modeled in communities elsewhere? So I set out from the hometown in Maine and ended up crossing the country.
And let's start with a clip from all the way across the country from Maine. A woman you spoke to who's director of the Bali Business Alliance in Bellingham, Washington. And she explains how this idea goes beyond numbers and profits, that is, reinventing the economy at the community level. Listen.
What we're building is a relationship economy, the accountability that comes from a relationship with another person, as opposed to a one-night stand economy where we don't have the accountability. If you think about it, today we don't know where our food comes from, when it ends up on our plate, and what kind of impact it's had along the way. We don't know where our waste goes when we're done with that meal. When you put your money in a mutual fund, you don't know the impact of that money circulating and where it's going. So we want to reconnect farmers with eaters, investors with entrepreneurs, and businesses with the communities, with the ecosystems that they serve, have a relationship.
But David Brancaccio, is she talking about environmental sustainability, or is she talking about creating jobs?
Well, what is developing before my eyes is almost a movement, has links with the environmental movement, but it is connected to the economy. That's Michelle Long from the Business Alliance for Local Living Economies. It's kind of a groovy chamber of commerce, businesses and hip consumers. And you know, if it was just Bellingham, Washington, where I spoke with her, that would be one thing. But there's 100 of these around the country in which the operative principle is this. How do we run a business that won't disappear, won't blow up on us? How do we run an economy that is, in a sense, sustainable in the way that we think of sustainability in the environmental context? I mean, I know her – I was delighted by her metaphor, the one-night stand economy. It's a little icky.
Versus the relationship
economy. You know where the dollar is going. You know where the service has come from, in a sense. And it's a delightful idea. What I ultimately found on this journey, and if we even play other clips in a moment, you'll see it will probably reinforce this point, that if we're going to change the economy, it's going to start by nurturing our local relationships in the local communities.
So here, back to your home state, is a clip about a new kind of banking system. Instead of banking money, you bank time. So in this clip, you talk to a woman who describes exactly how a time bank system works for her in Portland.
Jennifer London is on the receiving end of this time trade, getting her cellar weatherized.
Well, this is what I love about the hour exchange. First of all, you get to do things that you really love to do. And in my case, what I'm doing now a lot more is I'm a therapist, and it's a way that I'm able to offer therapy to people whose insurance has run out or who are uninsured.
You bump into a lot of those people?
Well, it seems like it happens more often than I would like. I have an option that they can join the time banks and earn time credits and pay me with that. And for me, that works out great because my doctor takes time credit from me.
Sweet.
Sweet.
That's incredible.
And he's an exceptionally good doctor. He's the doctor I'd want to see if I had money to pay or if he took my insurance.
Sweet.
It's a cool thing. It's not – dollars don't change hands in this time banking system. I don't know, Brian, we all have skills. What do you like to do in your spare time? Do you have a certain – do you repair bikes or do you make soup or anything?
Oh, I ride bikes. I like to read and play music. And
there you go. So you could play music. You could play music for an hour, okay, for some good cause. Someone brings you in. You could be the entertainment at a bar mitzvah. And then later you look through the list of services in this time bank that are then on offer from other people, and then you draw out an hour. I weatherized that woman's basement. I squirted in some insulation, put up some weather stripping for an hour, and this is what I got out. I got out a sailing lesson on the Casco Bay off of Portland, Maine, which is a pretty good deal. Why this is significant is it's really a social capital generation device. It is a way of knitting people together, forging relationships in communities that is probably the way economies used to work. The way our traditional economy now works is very different. You don't know. You know, when you put your money in a typical bank, it just sort of goes off into the capital markets, might end up in Tokyo, which I don't suppose is a problem. But you don't know where the money goes or how it's working after you let go of it. In this time banking system, you do. And what's interesting is I did some reporting on this initially before the film that's coming out this week was released that we put on the air. And Essex County, New Jersey liked the idea up in Portland. And I live in Essex County, New Jersey, and they've started up just recently a time banking system of their own. So I'm going to have to go down there soon and swing a hammer and wield a wrench.
David Brancaccio, if you're just joining us, you know the voice. His new film, Fixing the Future, will have its national theatrical debut this Wednesday here in the city. It will screen at the Clearview Cinemas in Chelsea at 7:30 p.m., and we're hearing some clips and talking about some of the ideas behind fixing the future in these kinds of alternative ways. This isn't really scalable, though, right? We do live in a globalized economy. The big numbers of jobs are going to come from exports and, health and education in the mass system and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Developing technology products and services that, you know, people sell in the monetary marketplace, do you almost have to be one of those unusual folks who wants to live off the grid in order for this to be the solution? Or are you suggesting something bigger?
It's exactly the question I had when I started on this quest, right, Brian? It's like, if it's small, that's very sweet. Isn't that very nice? I'm so happy for a couple of people trying something at home. So I was asking the scalability question. First of all, this marrying some of the ideals of the environmental movement with thinking about the economy has become pervasive. Everywhere I turned in this country, I saw examples of people trying this. So number one, it's happening at a lot of places. Ultimately, big things have to change, not just what's happening in local communities. National policy has to connect to this. Banking system may have to change, big stuff like that. But it may start with people in local communities trying these projects, asking questions about what they expect back from the economy. They expect livelihoods. They expect well-being. Then that can be connected to national policy. But I think that's where it starts, is local, and then it scales larger. One metaphor that we've used before is, you know, the cellular telephone system. All these little towers that pick up the signal from your iPhone or whatever are very low power. They're very small in scope. They're just a small circle of energy. But there's a lot of them, and they're networked. And that cell phone system has changed the world. So I think that's what we're seeing here with this new way of thinking about the economy, that it is a lot bigger than the local communities because it's so pervasive.
Let's take a phone call. Scott in Soho. You're on the air with David Brancaccio. Hi, Scott.
Yeah, hi. How are you?
Good.
I had a question about reporting taxes for bartering, because I know that if you do barter services with another company, or if you're a small company bartering with another one, you're supposed to file basically a 1099-B form. And I'm just wondering if the guest has looked into that, because it's another thing where you're trying to grow.
Yeah, no, Scott, we have looked into it. It's very, very interesting.
Oh, and Scott, you're such a literalist. David, go ahead.
But we have thought about it. I mean, yes, barter is taxable, but this isn't barter because it's not denominated in dollars. It's denominated in time. So the IRS is looking into this probably quite suspiciously, you know, looking for ways to tax it. Now, my position is not to spread a tax avoidance system for the national economy. I think we need to bring in money for taxes because we've got a lot of infrastructure and a lot of other social services that and other needs that need to be met in this wonderful country of ours. That said, the IRS has looked into the time banks, and they don't tax it because they consider them friendly favors, not taxable.
Interesting. One other type of business that you feature in the film is the worker co-op. One in particular, the Evergreen Laundry Co-op in Cleveland. And we're going to listen to one more clip. This is from Evergreen's manager, Medrick Addison, who talks about employing people in very low-income areas.
The bet is when Evergreen got started, like, we're going to fail because of who they hire. You know, and our bet is we're going to succeed because of who we hire. You know, when you hire people this is their last chance of being, you know, having a productive future or really doing something for their children or themselves, those people, are backs are to the wall. So they know, hey, I can't mess this up, you know? And that's what we're betting on.
So explain the context of that in terms of this idea of a worker co-op.
Yeah, you got to come to see this film to see Medrick. He's so charismatic. This has the capacity, what he's talking about, to transform inner cities that the traditional economy has passed by. Quickly, it works this way. Inner city Cleveland is a very tough place. There's a lot of challenges for people. They've looked at who are the big employers there anyway. It's the University Hospital, Cleveland Clinic, the Art Museum. What do they pay a lot of money for, Brian? They look through their budgets. In the case of the hospitals, laundry. A lot, tens of millions of dollars for laundry services. But it goes to a faraway corporation. Mm. So they set up the greenest industrial strength laundry that they can. They hire only people from the inner city neighborhoods, many of whom have criminal records, but they become part owners in this co-op. They have a long-term stake in the company. And in that way, they're essentially grabbing the budget line from the big player in town and diverting it straight into the neighborhood. And there's a lot of these. It's modeled on something that's been very successful in the Basque region of Spain. They're called the Mondragon Cooperatives.
Next we know, these people are going to be separatists trying to break away from Cleveland. No, I'm kidding.
The Basque cuisine is always good. Maybe we'll inherit that.
Just two quick local notes on this. We don't have time to put her on the air, but Amy in Manhattan is calling in to say there is a New York City time bank, and it's run by the Visiting Nurse Service. So something to look up. And the screening of your film is being sponsored by the New York City Network of Worker Cooperatives. So in our remaining 20 seconds, and you know the meaning of a soundbite, there's a New York City worker cooperative?
There are. Well, co-ops are everywhere. There's tens of millions of people who work for co-ops in different ways around the country. So we got the screening in New York on Wednesday on 23rd Street, a screening in South Orange the same night, South Orange, New Jersey, at the Clearview there.
All right, Clearview Cinemas in South Orange, Wednesday night in Chelsea, Wednesday night, 7:30 in Chelsea. Do you know when in South Orange?
Same time, 7:30.
Same time. All right, David Brancaccio will be in both places at the same time. Thank you very much for talking about your film, Fixing the Future.
My pleasure.